But first, a look at what's happening on the international front. President Trump will be addressing the nation tonight about the future of American involvement in Afghanistan. And in Iraq, government forces are on the second day of an offensive to retake the city of Talafar from Islamic State militants. For more on this and the week's other top international stories, we're joined by our colleague at the BBC, Rich Preston. And Rich, let's start with Iraq. What is the latest on this front, and what should we be watching for in the week ahead?
Well, Talafar is in the north of Iraq, Lauren. It fell to IS in 2014, and it's one of the last cities in Iraq to be held by Islamic State. It's only about 40 miles from the border with Syria, and that makes it strategically significant. In fact, during the battle for Mosul earlier this year, one of the key elements in that was to cut off Mosul from Talafar. Now, the Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi said IS militants had two choices, surrender or die. The US Army commander in charge of coalition forces, Lieutenant General Stephen Townsend, said they would be fighting, quote, until IS is defeated and the Iraqi people are free. So the US-led coalition has carried out dozens of airstrikes yesterday, and over the past 24 hours, several villages on the outskirts of the city have been liberated, but not the city itself. My colleague Rami Ruhayam from BBC Arabic is monitoring the situation from Beirut in Lebanon. I just spoke to him and he told me what he's looking out for over the coming days.
We're expecting updates about the number of villages that are being retaken by Iraqi forces. We don't know also what to expect in terms of the ferocity of the fight that remaining Islamic State group fighters will put up, but there are likely to be casualties, of course, even among the Iraqi army.
Now, IS are besieged on three sides. They're being attacked by an international coalition from the air and by the Iraqi army on the ground. So Rami says there really isn't much scope for IS. The one thing we'll be looking out for is civilians. Now, the United Nations says between 50 and 100,000 civilians remain in and around the city. And it's a dangerous place to be, but it's also a dangerous place to try and escape from. Those who have fled have faced tough conditions, trekking for between 10 and 20 hours in extreme heat. Meanwhile, food, water and resources in the city itself are scarce, so we're going to be keeping an eye out on that. And as far as the big picture goes, Islamic State still controls several other cities in Iraq, but Talafar is the last major city under their control. So a successful liberation of it is a crucial step in the fight against IS.
Okay, and Rich, the US ambassador to the UN is focusing on the Iran nuclear deal this week. Tell us what's happening.
Yes, on Wednesday, Nikki Haley is in Vienna to meet with the UN's atomic watchdog. Now, this is all part of the 2015 deal brokered by the US, the UK, France, China, Russia and Germany. And that involved the lifting of economic sanctions in exchange for Iran curbing its nuclear program. Now, President Trump has previously called this the worst deal ever and promised to scrap it if he became president. The US government checks to see whether Iran is complying with the deal. Those checks take place every 90 days, and they've consistently shown that Iran is upholding its end of the bargain. Nevertheless, when Mr. Trump was asked earlier this year if he expected Iran to be declared non-compliant, he said, personally, I do. Meanwhile, Congress passed more sanctions against Iran because of ballistic missile programs, and that angered Iran, which says it's trying to hold the deal together. Now, yesterday, President Hassan Rouhani, said his top foreign policy was to prevent the US destroying the deal. He's saying that standing up for the deal meant, quote, standing up to Iran's enemies and standing up in front of the US. So Nikki Haley meets with the UN on Wednesday for a checkup on how Iran is doing. And what if the US does declare Iran non-compliant? Well, I spoke to Amir Paivar from the BBC's Persian service, and he told me the effect that will have in Iran's capital, Tehran.
The hardliners would go back and say, look, we did all you asked us to do. We completely curbed our nuclear program. What do we get in return? The Americans still want more. We cannot trust the Americans. That's why we should leave this deal altogether. And that will escalate things on both sides.
So we'll be keeping an eye out and see what comes out of that meeting on Wednesday.
All right. So in Russia this coming weekend, there's a planned march through Moscow for internet freedom. Tell us what's happening there and why.
Well, there's a couple of important things to say. These kind of protests do happen in Russia every once in a while, but you won't see them covered widely on Russian media. And this is all about the government's efforts to keep control of the internet. Now, the backdrop to this is interesting. My colleague Vitaly Shevchenko is our expert monitoring Russian language media. He told me what the current media landscape looks like in Russia.
The key thing to know about Russia's media landscape is that all the main outlets are tightly controlled by the government. The top two TV stations are directly owned by the state, and the third one, a private channel, is unflinchingly loyal to it. President Vladimir Putin takes center stage. The media unquestioningly portray him as an all-powerful, wise leader who has restored Russia to its former might and glory.
Now, that pro-government stance in the media goes as far as the main opposition leader never even being referred to by name on conventional media. Now, of course, newspaper and TV companies can be bought either directly by the government or by government-friendly companies. The same is not true of the internet. So the internet and social media is really the only platform where these other voices can be heard. And that appears to be a concern for the Russian state. So they're addressing it. They've banned VPNs. They passed a new law in July, which comes into effect November the 1st. And they also passed a second law, which bans the anonymous use of online messaging services. That takes effect next year. The Russian government says these measures are only to block access to unlawful content and that they're not targeting law-abiding web users. Incidentally, this is ahead of presidential elections in Russia next March, during which the handling of the narrative and the news conversation will be crucial in the campaigns. These Freedom for the Internet marches in Russia are this weekend. They are not authorised by the government, so we can expect them to be policed robustly.
All right. That's our colleague with the BBC in London, Rich Preston. Rich, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Lauren.